He looks determined without being ruthless. Something heroic in his manner. There's a courage about him. Doesn't look like a killer. Comes across so calm. Acts like he has a dream. Full of passion.
You don't trust me, huh?
Well, you know why.
I do. We're not supposed to trust anyone in our profession anyway.
Peace, 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 and welcome to The Rematch, which is part of the BasketballNews.com podcast network. On The Rematch, you'll hear in-depth interviews with notable names from all walks of life. Because sometimes the media just doesn't get it right. The Rematch is that second opportunity to clarify, put things in proper context, correct fake news or misreported controversy. The media still exists as the most powerful entity on earth because they control the minds of the masses. I'm Matan Thomas, and the full truth is what we are aiming to catch. Many media stories omit details that would dilute their clickbait roar, and that's why there's a need for The Rematch. Today I sat down with two-time WNBA champion, two-times NBA Finals MVP, Olympic gold champion, EuroLeague champion, Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the Year, Breonna Stewart. We talked about her using her voice as an ally to fight against racial injustice, fighting for equality, battling back from an Achilles tear, winning the championship, and playing for Team USA and winning the gold in the midst of all of the racial inequality and injustice happening simultaneously in America. This was a great discussion. Hope you enjoy. Breonna Stewart, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on The Rematch, BasketballNews.com, Fly TV, and I'm going to use a portion of this in my book. So I've been following you, and I got to say, I've been really impressed by you for a lot of different reasons. So I'm going to start off on the court, and then we're going to go away from the court, but I'm going to start off on the court. So you missed the entire 2019 season to an Achilles tear.
Yep.
And then you came back. And I got to say, first of all, you set the bar pretty high for, like, KD, who's coming back, and he's having a great season. But you set the bar pretty high. So you came back, and you got the first-team All-WNBA team, second-team All-WNBA defensive team. Y'all won a championship and the WNBA Finals MVP. I mean, that's setting the bar pretty high. But just take me through that whole process of battling back from an injury like an Achilles tear.
Yeah. You know, so when I ruptured my Achilles in spring of 2018, you know, similar reaction to as KD said, you know, he saw his career flash before his eyes. And that's how I felt, you know, because it's like when you think of the Achilles, you think that's the worst injury to go through as an athlete, especially, you know, one where it's about athleticism and power and stuff like that. So it was definitely a roller coaster of a journey for me. Was definitely happy to get on the court. And then, you know, right when I was cleared returning to play, we were hit with a pandemic. So put a little wrinkle in things, but I was continuing to stay ready. And my expectations were high for when I came back into the WNBA season. We started the season in July, I think. I'm not sure exactly when we started, but you know, I had extra time to prepare and gave my leg extra time and really was able to kind of be my best. When I came back, I felt, you know, I felt better than where I was before I left with the WNBA and just continuing to be my best. And yeah, the expectations are high for KD, but he seems to be killing it right now. So, you know, I have a lot of faith in him. And unfortunately, we see a lot of athletes having Achilles injuries right now, and I'm not sure why, but I hope that they can all see, you know, the way we returned and they continue to return even better.
I remember when Kobe, rest in peace, when he tore his Achilles, and he always talked about how it felt like somebody kicked him
in the back of the leg. Mm-hmm. And he said he asked some player, I don't remember who it was, but he's like, did you kick me? And he was like, no. And he said he knew right then that he tore his Achilles. When it happened, was that the type of experience that you had as well? Felt like somebody kicked you?
Yeah. So the only thing was I ruptured mine when I was going into my jump shot. So when I was going up, it just went, which is weird. Usually it's when you step back. And I knew that there was a defender to the right of me. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in the air like, oh, she hit me, you know, because I fouled on play anyways.
Right.
And then I landed and I was like, something's not right. And I was like, I was on the ground and I was already thinking like, I hope I broke my ankle. Like, because I don't want to rupture my Achilles. You know, like, right. And then the moment I stood up, my like foot like went like this.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, for people that don't know, it's like you can only feel the bottom of your heel.
Wow.
And then everything else is just limp.
Wow. Wow. But you battled back, had an amazing season. Y'all won. You know what I mean? I think it was great. And then you won the Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the Year. And you was one of five headlining honorees, along with Naomi Osaka, LeBron, Patrick Mahomes. And it was really a great, and I want to read this quote Sports Illustrated said about you, and I want you to react to the quote. They said, when the moment came for Stewart to take a stand, the WNBA superstar didn't hesitate. Her support of Black Lives Matter never wavered. From the season's opening tip to the Storm's title celebration. And so I want to ask you, what caused your support for Black Lives Matter the way that you went full, like all the way in? You know, it's like sometimes people tiptoe in a little bit. You know what I mean? Like they're mm-hmm. seeing a lot of things, but you went full all the way in. What was the spark for that?
Well, I mean, I don't think I'm not a toe dipper. That's definitely for sure. And I think that, you know, the fact that we were able to see all of the social injustices happening this past year, and I think it was especially magnified because we were all at home mm-hmm. in those, you know, March, April, May months, and the power of social media and continuing to kind of see everything that was going on, whether it was with Breonna Taylor, or unfortunately, all the other victims, Ahmaud Arbery. And it was a no-brainer to me. You know, I think that a lot was happening as far as, you know, how the league was going to play. Mm-hmm. And knowing that our league was a league of 144 women, and majority of those women are Black, mm-hmm. you know, we knew that coming back, we had to be bigger than basketball. And you know, that was at the forefront. Obviously, I'm very happy that we won a championship mm-hmm. this season, but knowing that, you know, we had the power and ability to continue to uplift Black Lives Matter, continue to call for recognition for Breonna Taylor, and she still deserves justice mm-hmm. From Attorney General Daniel Cameron. Right. And you know, what we were able to do this season was extremely powerful. But I think also the fact is that, you know, this is not a one-off. This isn't a one-time thing. Yes, a lot of things happened this season as far as the stance for Black Lives Matter, but that should have happened years and years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. So we're a little late to the party, but we're going to continue to push for equality and fight for equality. And especially, like I said, a league full of women, we're always fighting for something.
Right.
So this was no different for us.
You know, you mentioned Breonna Taylor, and I want to go a little bit more in depth with the Breonna Taylor case and how yep. that really struck a nerve for you, especially being a woman. And, you know, a lot of times when you're talking about police brutality, they don't talk about the cases with women as much. You know, they don't talk about Sandra Bland. They don't talk about Chiquisha Clemons, who was, you know, beaten at the Waffle House, you know, by one. And when you're looking at those cases, is it hard to ask yourself, would that have happened if they were white? You know, I mean, that because I have daughters, and we my daughter Imani, she just turned 13. So we watch everything, and she asks the questions all the time, and she's watching. And I, you know, had the honor of interviewing Chiquisha Clemons, and she watched the interview. So we asked some questions about that. But that question comes up a lot. Would this have happened if they were white? So let's go to Breonna Taylor. You know, yeah. I mean, would that have happened if she was white?
Probably not. Obviously, I don't know, like, exactly, but I would say no. I think that, you know, the fact is, like you were saying, that, you know, we see everything happening about Black Lives Matter, but still, for some reason, Black women affected by police brutality are kind of not in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And that's why we were able to really, really, really promote Say Her Name this season. And when you were talking about Breonna Taylor, it just made me think of before the game, you know, every game before this season in the bubble, mm-hmm. we were able to have kind of like a video montage of who we were recognizing that week, whether it was Breonna Taylor, whether it was Sandra Bland, whether it was Michelle Cusso, mm-hmm. And continue to educate ourselves and educate others, because our country is not equal. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's obvious. In a country that is supposed to be equal and everyone treated the same, we're not. And you can see that by, I'm sure you saw the video of the 9-year-old girl, Black girl getting pepper sprayed in Rochester. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm from Syracuse, so Rochester's 2 hours away.
Right.
And to see that happen, and yeah, you have to think, would this have happened if she was a 9-year-old white girl?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
Right, right. And, you know, you mentioned you're from, you know, I went to Syracuse, and I know so many people from Rochester, and I'm talking to some of them. My teammate, Ryan Blackwell, he's from Rochester, and you know, I asked him what's with the Rochester police? Like, how is that? Like, how are they normally? And he said, honestly, the Rochester police is like every other police department in the country. You have incidents that happen, and you have, you know, things that you hear about and you experience. And if, depending on who you talk to, this is not something that is, you know, abnormal. And that's terrible to hear. You know, I mean, it's like you hear each case, and it's like, okay, goodness gracious, this is like the worst case that I've seen. And then you see something that tops it like the next week. But for a 9-year-old girl, I mean, my daughter's, you know, her age. And I'm like, first, why would you even have to handcuff a 9-year-old girl in the first place? And then to pepper spray her while she's calling out for her father, like as a father, that hurt my heart to hear. But then you're looking at, you know, society kind of make excuses for what they see happening from the police time and time again. Like you don't have to be anti-police to say the police were wrong and this is what we're seeing right here. And that's where the country always kind of gets caught up every time an incident like this happens.
Yeah, I do agree. I think that, you know, people get caught up in the other things. You know, they're like, well, you know, the police, like you said, not all police are bad. I'm like, nobody's saying that. Right. Nobody's saying that. Like, look what happened in this instance, in this instance, in this one, in this one, in this one. And it's like, something's not right. You know, whether they're not being educated correctly or taught correctly or whatever the case may be, but there's no excuses. And, you know, there should be nothing looked at except what was seen and what mm-hmm. happened.
Mm-hmm.
With each case, because there's no excuses, like I said.
I agree with you 100%. You know, I read a story about you that you were telling, something that happened while you were in college. You were driving. It was with a ex-boyfriend who was Black, and you were stopped by the police. Mm-hmm. Tell a story about what happened to you while you was in college.
Yeah, so I was with my now ex, and he was driving, and there was another Black guy in the back seat, and it was his teammate. Mm-hmm. And we were on the New Jersey Turnpike. And, you know, if you're in the Northeast, everybody knows New Jersey Turnpike, New York City, back and forth. And we got pulled over. And it was kind of like, it was we weren't doing anything wrong. The officer asked for the two guys' license and not mine. It was like, is everything okay? And I was like, yeah, like, what do we do? And he said that we followed the car too closely, which is like impossible if you're in the New York City area, because
right.
there's so many people and so many cars. And that was just an instance where it was like, no, the cop, he saw two black guys and a white girl and was like, I'm going to see what's going on here.
So he asked you if did he ask them if everything was okay? But was that just more directed to you? Like, was everything okay?
I just remember he was on the passenger side when he came around and he asked me.
He asked you. So it was kind of like, are you safe? Like, is everything okay? Are you here against your will? Like,
yeah, what are you talking about?
And it's crazy because that's like a story like you expect to hear like from the 60s and traveling through Mississippi or something like that. But that was the New Jersey Turnpike, you know? Right. I mean, it's tough because you hear stories like that. And I want to ask you, what did you come away from that situation thinking? Or what was your interpretation of it? And what did y'all talk about afterwards?
I think we just talked about the fact that, you know, that police officer was jumping to conclusions because of, you know, what the quick glimpse that he was able to see with two black guys and a white girl. And it's something where it's like, you know, you go into the conversation where if you go into a nice store and, you know, someone is following you around because you're black, or, you know, because you don't look like you fit the description to be in that store. That was like the similar case. It's like, people are prejudiced and judging you. And,
Yeah. And so as a, you know, and the thing about it is basketball and sports in general has the ability to bring people together in a way that they may not have crossed paths otherwise. You know, yeah. I mean, and you're exposed to other people's experiences and everything like that. And I'm just curious as far as, you know, you're around black women a lot, as far as, you know, from playing against them, playing with them, everything like that, around black women a lot. And in experiencing the privilege that you have of things that you can do that some of your black teammates can't do, do you recognize it? Or is there some, because you're sometimes this is a touchy subject to bring up white privilege with a lot of white people, and they get offended and they're like, oh, wait a minute, are you saying that I grew up with money? They're like, no, it doesn't have anything to do with money.
You grew up and you looked at differently.
You looked at differently. Talk about that, because a lot of people still don't understand right now when we say white privilege, they immediately have certain things that come to their mind. Like, talk about, you know, what you see, because you've spoken a lot specifically to white privilege for quite some time right now. You know, but talk about white privilege and what that actually means to you.
Yeah, I mean, to me, white privilege is just, you know, the fact that white people are seen, I guess, differently with the same situations compared to a black person. Okay. And that's how it is. White people are able to get away with more for whatever the reason may be. Like, when I think of white privilege off the top of my head, you think of the Capitol riots, you know, the domestic terrorist attack that really happened to our country. And yes, would the situation have been way different if it was however many thousand black people there instead of white? And I think just realizing that, and I think that the special part about it is, you know, my opportunity to be able to play basketball with and against people who come from all different races and backgrounds is to be able to hear their experiences and learn from them and continue to use that to educate myself and to educate my circle and my friends and my family, because, yeah, my family is white. And one of my teammates from the Storm, you know, her family's black, and learning how things have affected her and carrying that over to my family, if that makes sense.
No, definitely.
And continuing to put pressure on them and myself to be better and to realize, you know, what's acceptable and what's not.
You know, I remember before the one of the, you know, games, you referenced how you all did the montages to different people, different women who have been victims of police brutality and things like that. And I saw a beautiful one about Sandra Bland. And it just, it's, you know, it hurts. All of these cases just hurt my heart so much. Even just saying the name, like, you get chills. But looking at the case and looking at the details of it and why the police officer was felt threatened, I guess, and what they claimed, they felt threatened, was because she raised her voice, because she was fussing at the officer and she was upset at the fact that she was pulled over and everything like that. And it's crazy because, again, I have to go back talking to my daughter and she's like, you know, kids are on the internet all the time. She's like, we see things of white people cussing out the police all the time and doing all this. And I'm like, yeah, but you got to understand, we can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, we can't even think about doing that.
Yeah. And it's terrible. And it's sad for you. The fact that you even have to have those conversations with your daughter saying that, yeah, but they can and we can't. And that's, I don't know. I think that, you know, hopefully this year our country has learned a lot about the people in it and the people who are considered to be representing us. And I hope that we can continue to make this place better for people like your daughter, you know, for people like her. And I hope that her experiences as she continues to grow up are different than, you know, the ones of my teammates.
Right. Right. And I want to ask you this, you know, cause it's been very, and to me, I think it's very important. The fact that you as a white person have used your voice to speak to these things. People hear it, and it resonates throughout mainstream America differently when they hear you speak. And, you know, talking about white allies and why it's so important for white people in particular to speak out and call out racism and call out, you know, things that are unfair, even if they don't particularly, you know, are and they're not affected by it. The fact that they can say, you know, but it's wrong for anybody to be able to have to experience this. Talk about why it's so important to do that, because you've done that so great. And honestly, I think it's an example for other white people to also use their positions of privilege and their positions to be able to speak about it as well. But talk about why it's important.
I think it's important because, first of all, it's what needs to be done. I think that, you know, we've seen a lot as athletes. There is no, you know, sport and politics. Now it's super intertwined, you know, and we're people too. And we have the right to kind of speak on the things that we believe in. And I think that, you know, continuing to be vocal and be vocal as a white ally and continue to amplify the message for Black Lives Matter, for Say Her Name, for the Black community is what needs to be done. Because yes, as a white person, I have a different reach and a different platform than, you know, a Black person. And I think that, you know, that's why I continue to speak up, because for me, it seems super, super simple. Like, why can't we all be treated equally? You know, and something so simple is really, really difficult to achieve for some reason. And doing my best to make sure that everybody is aware of what's going on in our country and in our world. And I think that, you know, also having the opportunity to pass the mic, you know, let people hear from, you know, the Black women in the WNBA and what they have done and the fight that they have been fighting for an extremely, extremely long time. And I mean, the WNBA, I'm super, super proud of what we've done. I mean, just even thinking about all the stuff that we've done that past season in the bubble, and we were supposed to play basketball and be our best.
Right.
we did a lot, but I hope that we continue to kind of be on the right side of history and continue to push things forward in the right direction.
You know, I see you wearing your the USA team hoodie, and I remember a quote that you had because you was talking about the fact that you have been representing USA from 13, 14 years old, you know what I mean? Yep. In some capacity or other, as far as the Olympic Games. And I want to read a quote from you. I wanted you to go a little bit more detail about this. You said, "It's not easy reconciling the way I feel about playing for Team USA, that pride, with the shame I feel about racism that contributes to my own privilege and the oppression of Black people." That's a strong quote. And it's just explain the dichotomy of having the, you know, the pride in your country and representing your country, but still seeing so much that needs to change in your country and the shame of, you know, oppression that happens in your country. I thought it was very profound.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, when you think of the United States, everyone thinks of the best, you know, we're the best. And for me, it was like, you know, when I think about I'm on the podium, I have USA across my chest. We just won. We're watching the flag be raised and the anthem is going off. And that is like a tremendous amount of pride because it's like we won for our country. But then to be also representing everything else that's happening in our country, the racism that's going on, it's sickening. And it's, you know, something that obviously makes you, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess just really, you just can't believe it. And, you know, the fact that we can be on so many, like such a different end of a spectrum as far as, you know, how you feel that moment and what's happening in the world. And it's like, you know, I'm not proud of that. I'm not proud of the racism that's going on in our country, the racial injustices that are happening in our country. And, you know, really taking it to heart and taking it personal and, you know, realizing that, yeah, I'm a basketball player and I love to play basketball, but if I can help make our country and our world be a better place, then that's what's most important.
And I think you're definitely doing that. So I guess just have to say I'm so, you know, whenever we're talking about activism and the example of activism, the first example has to be the WNBA, you know, and the way that you, but the most important thing is the way that you all do it all together collectively. Yeah. Like, you know, no other organization has moved everybody collectively the way that you all have. And this is not just this past season in the Wubble, but going back before when the back-to-back killings of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile happened and the way you all did, y'all taught the men how to do a media blackout and use that time. And you saw this past season in the bubble, they followed your lead. And it's important. I just don't think that it's, you're given the recognition enough for, you know, the amount of, it's etched in the history books of athlete activism.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what the WNBA has done. So I can't say how much of a, you know, honor it is to interview you and honor it is to, you know, to talk to you about this. And I just got to say, just want to encourage you to keep using your voice because it's really, it's a powerful platform, a powerful voice, and that collective voice of everybody together. I just think that's so incredible. So I want to ask you this. How did you all do that? As far as, you know, you have players that aren't even from here, that don't even know, you know, American politics, racial, you know, things that they come, they play the WNBA, then they go back to their country. But it's like you all educated them quickly, and then they were all standing together and everyone as one unified voice. I just want to always ask, how did y'all do that? Because it wasn't, football didn't do this. When Kaepernick took a knee, he was down out there by himself for a while. And then Eric Reed was with him. And then, you know, you have a player here, a player there, but for the most part, you know what I mean? But y'all did it all together. And I want to ask you, how did y'all do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, the WNBA has been at the forefront of social injustices for a long time now. And I think for us, it's, you know, obviously you have to educate those that maybe aren't in this country on what is going on. But it's a no-brainer for us. I think that, you know, we talk about it on our players' calls or whatever the case may be, and we just do it. You know, we all put that same foot forward and really take action to what we're trying to do. And I think you can see that with Revan Warnock, you know, really representing him this summer in the bubble, and, you know, helping him get that that seat, you know, that state senate seat. And it's just super encouraging. It's encouraging that, you know, we are in a league with so many strong, powerful women who come from different places, different backgrounds, different races, and we can all come together as one. And we know that, you know, we're strongest when we're together, when we work all together.
I think that's great. So much respect to y'all. So, all right, last question, basketball question. I want to ask you, who are your favorite players to watch in the NBA and the WNBA? Just who are your favorites? Who are the people who you would pay money to go see in both the NBA and the WNBA?
KD's my guy. I mean, he's definitely one that I'm going to see. What LeBron is doing is kind of off the charts. So those two, I'm definitely going to see. Okay. And then in the WNBA, one I play with, Sue Bird.
Okay.
Diana Taurasi.
All right.
And who else? Candace. Candace is going to Chicago now. So that's,
I see.
That's going to be crazy. I can't wait to see it.
I know.
Hope they don't play well against us.
I hear you. Well, that's great. You know, so I much luck to you. Like I said, keep doing what you're doing. Much respect to you and the entire WNBA. And thanks again for coming on the Rematch and for being a part of my book. So thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Rematch. You can find more episodes on basketballnews.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review. You can also find my articles on basketballnews.com, along with exclusive content from Kenyon Martin, James Posey, and more. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at AtonThomas36. Let me know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see as a guest. I would love your feedback.